We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Weird 60s game show.
Yeah,
now,
I mean, it just continues. It is like you're spinning a wheel. We never know what we're going to get today.
I like this one.
This one's better than the last one.
It feels like we should be dancing like this in a 60s party.
Like what, Cody? What would that be?
This is the dance.
He's okay.
I got that. Someone knows. You guys see what I'm doing. Yeah, I should probably describe it for the radio.
Yeah, that's
what everybody knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
They can just hear it in my... They can sense it.
They still don't know what you're doing.
That thing with the two fingers over the eyes back and forth. That thing.
Some dance scene in Austin Powers. Is that enough? Jesus.
Oh, man. It is the 1 o'clock hour. Cody and Gold.
It's been a long 2020, okay?
We were just talking during the break.
A long year.
Yeah.
Long, weird year.
College football may not be happening. It's just changing day by day, hour by hour. Now, feeling very good, though, about baseball, which continues to move forward. And the Royals, now winners of four in a row, they find themselves 7-10 on the season. To talk more about what we saw the last couple of days heading into this week, a rare off day as well for Kansas City, we go out to the 610 hotline. Welcome in David Leske of Baseball Prospectus and Royals Review. So, Leske, what we've seen from this offense suddenly come to life, is it more what they actually are, or is it still a period of time where you're like, okay, let's see it for another week?
Well, with this offense, it was odd because they were looking terrible, but all the metrics show they were really good. And then there's been some issues with StatCast data this year because of the new tracking system and all that. But there's everything showed they're hitting the ball hard, they're doing everything right, but the results just aren't there for them. And so you want to believe that these last few days have been about things evening out and about them actually getting to match the metrics, the hard hit rates, the barrel rates, all that good stuff. You don't know for sure. I mean, they're probably going to end up somewhere in between, really. I mean, what they did yesterday is probably more of an accurate representation of their offense than, you know, beating the Cubs 13-2 on Thursday night. But at the same time, with the way the pitching staff has gone, what they did yesterday, 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position, that needs to be better. But what they did yesterday is enough to win some games with the way the pitching staff has gone, as long as they can get a couple more hits with runners in scoring position. And, you kind of hope they settle into that middle ground. And I never expected them to be a great offense or even a good offense, but I thought they could be decent to slightly above average. And I think that that's where they could end up once the dust kind of settles. Of course, that might not happen until like the last series of the year. So who knows, really?
When you talk about the pitching staff, specific, and we can talk about the bullpen in a minute, but the starting rotation, this is a close of a qualified starting five they've had in a long time. Now, I know there's still unknowns because we only have, you know, less than a handful of starts of Brady Singer, a couple of starts from Chris Bubich, a lifetime of starts of Danny Duffy, a year of Brad Keller, and so on. But we know, for the most part, other than Bubich and Singer, who the rest of the rotation is. And honestly, it seems like a decent major league rotation with some greater upside going forward. But if Bubich and Singer can hold fort, this is a top 10 rotation, top 15 rotation in baseball as it's currently constructed?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the other teams enough to really make that decision.
I mean, they're not the Indians, okay? I get it, but
they're not the Indians. They're not the Reds, who the Royals will face this week and next week, too. But it's a solid rotation, and it's especially solid in a short season with expanded rosters, because that allows the Royals to utilize the bullpen more. And look, Matheny's been really good about getting guys out, not facing them a third time, all that good stuff. I don't know how that will look in a 162-game season with a 26-man roster, but I know how it's looked in a 60-game season with a 30, now 28-man roster. And he's been really willing to go to his bullpen early and often. And that when you've got guys who maybe aren't seven-inning starters, but four- to six-inning starters who can be good for four to six innings, and then you have that bullpen behind him, I think this rotation does exactly what this particular Royals team needs them to do. Again, you go into next season, if they do the same thing, I don't know that you can use the bullpen this way. But it's not next season, it's this season. And so, for now, yeah, they get the job done. And you feel, and you know, in past seasons, you go into a start and go, well, this or that person's pitching, it's going to be 8-0 before they even get up to bat. You don't feel that. It could happen, of course.
Sure. Because,
you know, good starters have bad starts. But you just don't feel like they're out of the game before it even starts, which is a really nice positive trend, I think.
And with the bullpen, Lesky, I mean, all four in Rosenthal, Staumont, Barlow, and Holland, I have confidence in all four, really three this weekend that we saw. But when you see that flexibility, I guess, now that Mike Matheny has, his willingness also to put these guys in whatever spots he deems is necessary. But whether it is Barlow happens to get the save yesterday or the day before, if it's Rosenthal, it seems like all four of these guys are capable of doing that. And I don't know how many teams you could say that about.
Yeah, and adding Kyle Zimmer, because he's been more of a long man so far this year, but he looks as good as he's looked since he was healthy for 2 weeks, I think, in like 2014. He is, I don't know when what year it was he was actually healthy, but whatever it was, this is as good as he's looked. So I don't know when he's going to get his way into that inner circle, but he's been really good. Jake Newberry hasn't been bad. I mean, this is, you're looking at a bullpen that, it's a dramatic overhaul. And the biggest thing that I saw in the offseason and then in the first spring training and then in summer camp, they went from just having some guys back there to having some stuff back there. And you've got two guys who are throwing upper 90s. Scott Barlow has nasty off-speed pitches. And, by the way, throws 96. So it's not like he's throwing the deepest pitch up there. Greg Holland's getting up to 94. Zimmer, him again, upper 90s. I mean, there is some serious stuff in that bullpen. And even Gabe Speier, who hasn't been great as a lefty out of the bullpen and is the only lefty out of the bullpen right now, he's got a pretty good fastball too. And so they're coming at you with stuff. And, look, I'd rather take my chances on that than the Brad Boxbergers of the world. And it's working out
yes.
for them so far, as we kind of all expected it to.
Why would you mention that name? Why would you even?
I'm trying to ruin everybody's Monday.
Okay? We're talking about good things today. We're getting ready to hand things off at 2 o'clock to the drive, and Carrington's calling himself Hope Harrison. Speaking
moved on from Brad Boxford.
I didn't know if you wanted to talk about Jorge Lopez too. I don't know. We can do that while we're at it.
He got picked up by the Orioles.
Not to mention that earlier when I mentioned starters who you know you're down before they come up.
Yeah, but although if the Orioles give him a shot to be like a middle reliever, I still think there's some hope for Jorge Lopez's major league career.
A lot of the Astros development plan in place. I could see him finding it there, but you know, we'll see. It's not the Royals' problem anymore.
We're talking about the bullpen, specifically Josh Staumont, earlier in the show today. I called him the best reliever in baseball, and I really don't even regret it. Would you like to try to convince me otherwise?
I mean, there's a lot of good relievers, and so it's hard to say that he is the best. Of relievers I've seen, he gets the weirdest looks from hitters. They just look dejected. I'm not saying Staumont is Patrick Mahomes, so starting right there. But he gets looks from hitters the way defenses look after Mahomes makes some weird random pass against them. It's a look on their face like, how did that happen? And I put it on Twitter yesterday. Honestly, I love it. It's amazing to watch. And so I don't know that he's the best. I mean, there's a lot of really good relievers. The sample is minuscule still. It's never going to be big for a reliever this season. But I would be surprised if any other reliever gets the same confused looks after they strike out against him and Staumont.
They're Bugs Bunny swings where the guy like twists around in his waist 1,000 times and then falls down.
I thought Blanco hurt himself yesterday, honestly. I thought he had twisted something when he swung and missed. And I think maybe he did too, because he didn't get up for a second. And you just don't see that very often as consistently as you do with Staumont. It's really fun the way he's pitching right now.
Lastly for you, Lesky, this week, we know there's two off days. Now this team is rolling, and you're kind of like, I don't want the off days to kick in. They unfortunately have two of them this week. I know they'll take it, though. How do you feel the Royals need to finish this week in order for you to kind of keep on this trajectory? We were talking a lot last week. Like, they still need to keep in that no worse than 3 or 4 games under 500 range to keep everybody's belief in the city going. What do they need to do this week in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, play decent baseball. You know, they looked so bad for that 6-game losing streak, and they didn't look horrible in Detroit. They didn't look horrible in Cleveland, and then they played the White Sox in the first 3 games against the Cubs, and they just looked about as bad as possible. And just keep hitting a little bit and throwing the starters out there, the relievers out there the way they have been. They need to show something. If they win or lose, you can't, you know, you want them to win, obviously, but I just want to see quality, competent baseball, because if they can get through this stretch, and if they can get through it decently, you know, and that this is wins and losses, they go game or 200, 500 over the next couple weeks, it eases up toward the end of the season. And they could have a shot to make a run. I'm not saying they will, but they could actually give themselves an opportunity for that. But they've got to go through the next 11 or against the Reds and Twins. And then it I don't know what the Cardinals are even going to look like at that point, but they could be tough. And then they get the White Sox again. So there's a lot of difficult games ahead. But if they can play competent baseball, be hovering around 500 in that time, they could make a run at the end of the year.
Are they even going to try to make the Cardinals play 60 games anymore?
I don't know how they can at this point. But they've got to get to, I don't know what the magic number is, but 52, 53, somewhere in there. I feel like they have to get somewhat close to 60, or else how is it?
Win percentage at this rate.
What was that?
I said win percentage to decide it, but I don't like it.
Well, yeah, but it's a lot easier for weird things to happen in 40 games than 50 games, and then 50, you know.
Sure.
So the fewer games you play, the more variance there is. They've got to get them up in the 50s, I think. And I mean, they're already canceled through, what, Wednesday, right?
Yep.
And then probably, I mean, it's hard to imagine them playing on Thursday at this point. So it's going to be rough. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Baseball, luckily, continuing elsewhere. Just the Cardinals, just waiting on the Cardinals to get their act together. David Lesky, Baseball Prospectus, Royals Review. Appreciate it, man, and let's hope for another 4 in a row.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you asked about Stammon being the best reliever. And
I know it's like a sample size of, like, please compare these 200 arms.
He has, this year, been as good as anybody. That's fair. You can say that.
He got 2 swings in that game yesterday. And back-to-back at bats.
Is he better than others? I don't know. Has he been as good as just about everybody else? Yes.
He got swings that, like, it looked like me trying to take a cut.
You wouldn't be able to get the swing started, probably. But, yeah, I gotcha.
I could swing a bat. I'd be late.
I mean,
but they were late.
The catcher would already be walking off the diamond by the time you got the swing around, I think, is what would happen. Yeah, he's just nasty. His stuff
I'll
is
try.
Sick.
Like, if I told Swanee, if he wants to get it set up in a post-COVID time, I'll try to swing the bat against Stammon.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I'd look any worse than those guys. Because the worst case, the ball would hit before I even swung, which would in a way make me look better.
How you gonna play it with that foot?
The foot's getting better, I said.
I already know how this is setting up. This is setting up for the combine in March. This is already setting up for now the foot. When his vertical gets the real results in March from not cheating like he did this year, he's going to have a terrible vertical and blame it on the foot. That's where this is headed.
That I've had these foot issues. It was in the right foot for a long time. And
so
now,
definitely know you cheated.
But for years, shouldn't you guys be embarrassed that you lost to me as badly as you
did? We're all embarrassed.
You should be embarrassed that I am the 6'10 champ.
Yes.
I am, but that should be embarrassing for everyone. For everyone at the station, that me, the guy who probably needs 2 foot surgeries, has had several knee surgeries, and is out of shape, is somehow your champ. Like, you have to recognize that I won, even though that's the case. I don't make excuses for my performances. If I have a bad...
Okay.
If I have a bad vertical jump, I have a bad vertical jump.
We'll see if we have it. COVID might impact it this year. I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do.
That's all the way in February. I'm not worried about that.
February, March, who knows?
It's down the road. We're fine. But then I'm going to be the optimist guy down the road. But yeah, it's obviously difficult to try to make that prediction going forward. But I feel pretty good about it.
Okay. Well, I appreciate David Lesky giving us a couple minutes there talking about the Royals, who have today off, then back at it in Cincinnati tomorrow. Early start tomorrow, like 5:37, I believe, first pitch here on 6:10. And
weirdest time ever.
Yeah, and then, of course, Vern's pregame will start right around 4:30 tomorrow. Chris Bubich on the mound against the Cincinnati Reds. So the Chiefs news you brought up from Tom Pelissero, that came out in the last 45 minutes or so with Alex Okafor restructuring his contract. And this isn't that example of it, but you had Sammy Watkins, who over the weekend was talking about his decision-making in contracts and him being able to take a little bit less money. Now, this seems more of a just a flat-out restructure to move some things around and to clear up. He's a free agent next year, and they want to make some room to be able to, I don't know, carry it over. Yeah, this is his best opportunity to stay. So this isn't Sammy Watkins or these other guys choosing to, I think, take discounts to stay in the Chiefs organization. And how much is it really a discount? But that was something that was focused in from Sammy Watkins over the weekend when he was asked about just this offseason, his decision to stay in Kansas City.
Why wouldn't I come back to win the best organization, the best team? And of course, we just won a Super Bowl. And if you look at the team, we haven't lost not one player who was active last year. So my job and focus was to come back and try to, you know what I mean, win another Super Bowl. And I think that's the biggest thing. And as far as my contract, I think I made enough money. I love more money, but as far as being smart and educated on this team and knowing that, you know, you got to pay Pat, you got to pay Chris, you got a lot of guys you got to pay. So for me to take a contract like I did was a blessing. I still have opportunity to reach up to whatever amount that I can reach up to, but just really just showing the world, like, it's not all about money. This is my happy place, so why not take a smaller contract and, you know, come out here and play with the guys I've been playing with.
That last part where you said this is my happy place, and
he's been a lot of different teams.
He's been on a lot of different teams, but you remember the piece that came out, has it been 2 months? I lose track of time. But
By Tyler Dunn from Bleacher Report?
Yeah, where it spoke to Andy Reid just gets Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins he's never had the relationship with a coach that he's had with Andy Reid. And so to hear him then say, like, Kansas City's my happy place, that makes sense to me, because not only is he winning football games, right, and having success, but he found a coach, as we learned in that Bleacher Report piece. He found a coach that it gets him, even like joking around in the team meetings. Remember there was that sequence that was referenced where like Andy Reid was like, quit talking to your people or whatever. Like that part, I think, is more beneficial to the Chiefs and why he was able to and willing to take the incentive laden contract than anything else. Like I understand that Kansas City is a very desirable place for National Football League players right now. You have a chance to play with Patrick Mahomes. You've got Andy Reid as your head coach. They just won a Super Bowl. If you're a player that can go somewhere else and maybe make a few extra million dollars, maybe you're saying, okay, I'm not gonna leave because of that. But I also think this past offseason, like with Sammy Watkins, with DeMarcus Robinson, for example, those two guys, the wide receiver market also wasn't what everybody thought it was going to be. The trade market wasn't there for Sammy Watkins because of the contract. Like, I don't think it was strictly just these guys are all going to start taking discounts. I think it absolutely plays a role.
Well, these guys are taking discounts.
See,
Watkins took a discount. Chris Jones took a discount for this year. Mahomes taking a discount.
Yeah. See, okay, and that's where we get into the wording of it, because I disagree with that. Mahomes, to me, did not take a discount. He was able to structure the contract in a way that made it flexible for Kansas City for the first couple of years. He didn't take a discount. Chris Jones did not have a signing bonus, but his money structured in a different way because he got guaranteed money. Like, there's give and take in a contract.
Sure, but that's a big, important part. Signing bonus money, guaranteed upfront money, is really important to players. So while it might not be a dollar-for-dollar discount, that is more contract structure difference than most guys will give you. And it's hard, like, you know, you said, like, oh, it's easy to be happy when, you know, Patrick Mahomes throwing the ball, Andy Reid's the coach, and you're winning Super Bowls. But guys leave Super Bowl teams all the time for a variety of reasons. One being money. Two, sometimes being opportunity. DeMarcus Robinson did not get paid much money to be in Kansas City, but he signed back here on a one-year deal for $2.2 million. The market probably wasn't tremendous for DeMarcus Robinson, but he could have taken a similar contract from somebody else or even a little bit less and instead got to be on a team with even more opportunity, therefore making himself more money would have been his argument. Sammy Watkins, similarly, right? He could have said, man, what am I, the fifth option on this team? I'm behind Kelce, I'm behind Hill, I might be behind Clyde Edwards-Helaire this year. Is Mecole Hardman going to take more time for me? How far down the list am I? I was a 600-yard receiver last year in one of my more healthy seasons in the last few years. He played 13 or 14 games last year. You know, some guys leave for opportunity, too. Like, this is kind of an uncommon occurrence to say, yeah, we'll structure a contract in a way that makes sense, and we'll keep playing here, even though, you know, we might be stacked at an offensive position. Guys leave for a variety of reasons.
I'm just not expecting
this together
better
than I expected.
I'm just not expecting, if you believe it's already happening in a huge way, excuse me, in a huge way,
You're not expecting it going forward.
I don't think we're going to be talking like 3 years from now that it's still going to be beneficial in that way. Now, I think if you're saying next year, who could that be? I think that Eric Fisher comes to mind. You know, is he willing at his, you know, where he's at in his career? Is he willing to take less money than what he actually could get next year? Maybe so. And if so, that would be an example of a guy taking a discount.
I think a trend is already being set early. I understand that, like, this is the, like, do we have enough evidence to fully support this theory? The answer is no, but it happens so very rarely in the NFL. This already seems kind of like a statistical anomaly on how high it is. So if it continues, somebody next year takes a discount, then even further down the road I go.
All right, let's get to the Pop Culture Corner.
Pop Culture Corner.
It's actually kind of a lot today, but I'll go with what I've got here. It's actually been a lot of pop culture stuff, specifically for movies. But this is from art director Tom Brown on Denis Villeneuve's Dune, which we all know is going to be incredible, and it's going to be one of the best movies any of us have ever seen.
All of us know.
Really big fan of that art director. What was his name? Alex?
Tom Brown.
Tom Brown. Pretty close.
We all know.
What?
He says, I have no idea what you're talking about.
He says the designs are just incredible. The scale's quite amazing. I do think it's going to be extremely special. I read that they're looking at this as the new Lord of the Rings, and I firmly believe that.
Ugh.
There's going to be two movies. Denis Villeneuve is one of the best directors alive right now. He already did Blade Runner 2049, which was incredible. Dune's going to be the greatest sci-fi film ever made.
I feel like you said one of the best directors for like 14 guys during the course
Denis
of this.
Denis Villeneuve genuinely is.
Okay.
This is the real one. Incredible.
I'm going to need you to
Arrival,
do these tiers like quarterbacks.
Incredible. Prisoners.
Arrival was good.
Incredible. Blade Runner 2049. Incredible.
Okay. Can you,
the designs are going to be like Lord of the Rings, which won a bunch of awards for that. Okay. All right.
Tomorrow, can you put together for me your like NFL tiers, but for directors? I got to know who's in like, who's tier one, tier two. I need like a 5-tiered NFL style director list, just so I know where Denis Villeneuve lands.
That's fine.
He's interested.
Top five for me right now.
I don't know, man. Is Jason Momoa a good enough actor to like carry a big chunk of a movie?
No, He's a supporting role. He's not like a star.
Zendaya, she's really kind of jumped up the list.
Yes, I think she's in a supporting role too. It's Timothy Chalamet is like the star of the movie.
Looks like Josh Brolin's in it. I like Oscar Isaac. I'm just kind of going through the list. I was just trying to take a look.
It's supposed to come out, December?
December I can look forward to Dune?
It's probably not going to happen. Yes, Timothy Chalamet
See, that's the problem. It's like all these movies.
Paul Atreides, who's like the main character. Okay.
Are we just going to have at some point, like next summer, just a bunch of movies all coming out at once?
It's just a massive, massive cast because Dune is a massive, massive story, which is why when they made it in the 80s, they just weren't prepared to really tell the full scale of that story. Denis Villeneuve is going to do an incredible job. I cannot wait.
What else do we need to know?
If you're Fargo fans, I've only seen the first season. I've heard it's really good. I need to get caught up. But the Chris Rock season, starring Jason Schwartzman, finally has a release date.
Taking place in Kansas City,
September 27th.
Yes, no, that's true.
It's not in Kansas. It's not like filmed in Kansas City, but the center of the story is set in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's
season four, I think, of this.
September 27th. Yes, season four.
No, I'm five. I've seen a couple episodes of Fargo. I do need to watch a little more.
Football season and baseball playoff time.
That's the issue with it coming out.
Hit me in a bad time of the schedule, but I can find some time, I'm sure.
Yeah, I got no issues with
Fargo.
Just
as soon as I finish, all the other shows I'm clearly not finishing.
I had never heard of Dune until today. I've definitely...
Not even the 80s version?
Nope. I've talked about it several times on this show.
Really?
It's
I don't know if you have, but I'm familiar with Dune.
I'm pretty sure I have. I'm more excited about this than anything else that's coming out over the next 2 years.
Wait,
even Tenet?
Yeah, wait. Yes. I thought Tenet was like this, like at the top.
Tenet's going to be incredible. Dune is a whole nother ball game for me.
Huh.
It feels like it's just like
I'm
Tron,
a big fan
but not quite.
Of the books. I've seen all the miniseries that they made. I own them on DVD. No, they're not easy to find. I love Dune.
Okay. All right. I'm all about Fargo, though. That's fine. That's the pop culture corner. No Tenet update. That'll have to come later. I'm sure it seems like every day there's something new for Tanette.
But there's a lot of these Dune books.
I haven't read all of them.
Dune 2020.
But yes. It's...
Sorry, 1965. There was one of the greatest science fiction stories
of all time.
This movie's been in the works since 2008? Wow. Okay.
Well, you have me at least interested enough to see if there's like, is there a teaser trailer out?
No. The trailer's supposed to drop later this month.
Okay. I'll keep an eye out for it.
We'll keep an eye during the Pop Culture Corner. Coming up in 90 seconds, Sirt has got his fantasy flash giving you some advice on Chiefs wide receiver Sammy Watkins. You heard from him. What's his fantasy value this year in this Andy Reid offense? And also, we'll get to what's trending. And the latest with college football, what's the latest in the Big Ten and its cancellation potentially of the fall football season?
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio. What's trending?
All right, let's check in on the hot topics. Trending.
Number one here on Cody and Gold, news from Tom Pelissero of NFL Network that the Chiefs and defensive end Alex Okafor have restructured a contract recently, clearing about $2 million off of the Chiefs' cap space this year. It means he'll be a free agent, though, next March. So do a max of $4.96 mil here in 2020, including about $860,000 in per-game roster bonuses and another $12 million in incentives. So, yes, if you factor in all the opt-outs as well, Chiefs reportedly, if the numbers are that are on over the cap are correct, about $15 million or so in cap space could be used this year, could roll it over to next year. We know the cap is going to change, so we'll see what they do with that, if anything.
He'd still have like a $2 million dead cap hit next year, but that's what he was going to have anyway if the Chiefs walked away from him, so... I guess smart heads-up move. Any way you can clear up any amount of cap space right now is probably the best decision for Kansas City. Brett Veach continues to prove. Him and Brant Tillis. It's a lot of movement in that cap space. Remember when they had $177?
Oh, yeah.
Then they signed Chris Jones. Then they signed Patrick Mahomes and still have $15 million.
So that's what a couple opt-outs will do for you.
Seems like they've got a kept a pretty tight on them. Also, what's trending is obviously college football trying to decide what they're going to do next. Multiple reports suggest the Big Ten was going to cancel their season sometime in the next 24 to 48 hours, although a Big Ten spokesman said they've yet to take that vote. Pac-12 said to be close to a cancellation as well, with the Big 12 waning on both sides, and the SEC and the ACC staying quiet on their end right now. To Brett McMurphy, the SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey said, the best advice he got since COVID was, quote, can we play? I don't know. We haven't stopped trying. We support, educate, and care for our student athletes every day, and we'll continue to do so every day. I think a lot of what they're doing right now is the risk involvement between those conferences and which way it's going to go. Sounds like the Big 12 could be a hinge piece, but really college football is going through a huge decision-making process somewhere in the next 24 to 72 hours, most likely by the end of the week at the latest, on whether or not to actually play their college football season at all.
We're going to talk more about this because I think we could see a situation where the SEC, for example, maybe the Big 12 also, like, they have the same conclusion as the Big 10, but maybe we don't find their reasoning out until September, as in like 3 weeks, 2 weeks before the season.
Sure.
I can see that play out. Next up on what's trending, the PGA Championship, first major in golf in a long time, over a year, wrapped up over the weekend out in San Francisco. Colin Morikawa, who is just 23 years old, the winner, 13 under, two-stroke win, had six golfers at one point tied for the lead. That's because Paul Casey, Dustin Johnson, Matthew Wolf, Jason Day, Bryson DeChambeau, and Tony Finau were all there in the mix. Congrats to him, though. And if you're wondering, for Tiger Woods, unfortunately, wasn't in the mix at all. Did make the cut. Finished tied for 37th, one under for the tournament.
Fine work from the local Let It Fly crew, too. Shout out to a local business doing
absolutely
great work out there. Former guys used to come on the show occasionally. Glad to have him on. Number four for what's trending, the Royals played over the weekend, swept the Twins after knocking out the Cubs late in the week last week. That puts them back in the mix-ish. 7-10, now the record stands before an off day tonight. They got Brady Singer his first win. They hit a whole bunch of home runs over the weekend, including Soler having two on Saturday, and Nicky Lopez hitting his first of the season. But most importantly, the Royals put themselves at least squarely back into the conversation, because at 3-10, they're getting ready to drop 2 of 3 against the Twins and drop that Cubs game last week. I don't know how much Royals they'd have been talking about. Some, because I just told you Josh Donmont's the best reliever in baseball. But I mean, not nearly as much. The bullpen has been great. The starting pitching has been more than effective. And the offense finally showed some life over the weekend, which we can really appreciate. But again, the Royals take a break today, too, against Cincinnati, starting tomorrow. We heard right here on 610 Sports Radio.
Yeah, you know, we were about staying alive. Well, they did better than that. They found a way to gain a game. Now just 300-500. Not to mention also came against the Twins, which is not just impressive, but also it helped you in the divisional race. It brought them back to the pack. They were kind of, I don't say running away with the division, but they were out in front. They absolutely were out in front. And so now you're there, your position, you got confidence. Two off days this week. Rotation's good to go. Bullpen's looking great. Offense woke up. Let's see if it continues against the Reds. And then you're right back at it against Minnesota. So, yeah, it was very, very nice to see, especially Hunter Dozier in the lineup for the first time this year, fresh off the COVID list. And right away, first AB gets you a couple RBI. Lastly, on what's trending, Sporting Kansas City did reveal their schedule for the remainder of 2020. And they're going to be the first sporting event with fans since March here in Kansas City. Three home games, going to be under their first phase of the resumption of the season. 14% capacity out at Children's Mercy Park. So 2,585 fans are going to be allowed out at the soccer games going forward. We'll see what that looks like. And is that a good sign when we talk a lot about the NFL and at Arrowhead, for example? I know they're different jurisdictions. That's in KCK. Arrowhead's in Kansas City, Missouri. There's different health departments you have to go through, different also those in political office you got to deal with, quite frankly. So like that, those are all, they're not apples to apples, but a good sign if you are thinking about fans maybe being in the stands at all at Arrowhead this year. That was why I took it as well.
I mean, anytime there's fans in the stands, every sport have been handling these things different, but it's not to say they couldn't continue handling it that way. Their president, Sporting Kansas City's president, Jake Reed, had said that it wasn't a financial decision. It doesn't make a ton of sense if they're doing that because the fans want it. That's why. He said a financial driver, that would not be a good decision. Also said that they could have done more than that if they wanted to, like, push it a little bit. But they felt like that was a good percentage, at least for the first few home games. I'm curious to see how that works. I'm still nervous about even thousands of fans in a socially distanced crowd at the moment. But I'm at least interested to see how that works.
See how they pull that off. All right, that's what's trending here on Cody and Gold. And one of those things we brought up was college football and where things are at. And it does change hour by hour. By the time we're on the air tomorrow at 10 a.m., we'll maybe have some more clarity.
Maybe.
If not, there could be some more confusion because there's mixed reporting going on, quite frankly. You have the Detroit Free Press, a very reputable outlet up in Detroit, saying that the Big Ten's already decided. They reported that this morning. Big Ten has already decided no Michigan football, no Michigan State football, therefore no Big Ten football this year. Then there's reports that the Big Ten and their spokesperson has said, well, there's been no vote. Now, let's be real how that all works. If the reports are true that the Big Ten wants another conference to join them in canceling all at once, that would make sense. The Big Ten may be delaying this to try to see if they can't
at least get somebody to come along with them.
Yeah, so it's not just, oh, the Big Ten, you're the only ones canceling this thing, and they're going to get crushed for it.
SEC's going to be dead last.
We're already seeing, and yes, I do think the SEC will be dead last, but this sets up just a really interesting dynamic of where we're headed for the next couple of days as well. If the Big Ten, who was first to put out their schedule and where they were headed, if they're going to be the first one to cancel, and I still think that's where they're headed, does another conference follow? And if not, is it going to be a situation where we're going to see the Big 12 and the SEC and the ACC or the Big 12 or whoever decide, yeah, we're moving forward? Is the end result the same? Is it going to be a lot like March, which was Ivy League cancels conference tournament? Like, wow, why are you canceling your conference tournament? Column comes out, USA Today, NCAA tournament should be canceled. Like, what? What are you talking about? How is this possible? Then it was like, every conference started canceling their tournament. Then it was like, oh, you got to cancel the NCAA tournament. And then we all know the whole entire sports world shut down. Are we going to be in a similar position where Big Ten's first out of the gate here, cancels, gets crushed, seems crazy for a lot of people. And then 3 weeks later, the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC and the Pac-12 all say, yep, we're going to have to cancel too. And we're like, oh. So the Big Ten got crushed for no reason. Is that where this is headed to? Because I kind of think there's a chance that that's where this ends up.
I got to be honest. I don't blame the Big Ten if they make this decision. And I don't think it's their fault if college football goes down because they were the first to decide it. But as you have pointed out before, and I don't think that this works in every case, but in this case, Man, if I'm the SEC, the Big Ten doesn't decide when I decide. We don't have to go on this hand in hand because we haven't made any other decision in college football that way. We've been five separate entities for a very long time. As far back as conference realignment, long before that and long after that, we've never worked together as a group. Now, while that is a very serious flaw for college football, and they could use some governing body who handles the five Power Five programs for football on doing things unilaterally, at the moment, if I'm the SEC, the Big Ten does not decide my fate. And the Big Ten schedule was scheduled to start quite a bit sooner than the SEC's. The SEC's start date was later than anyone else's in college football. And the reason why is because they wanted time to make that decision. I mean, the Ivy League canceled all their fall sports a month ago. So this is already moving slower than what you pointed out being for the, I think it was 32, 33 days ago, Ivy League was like, yeah, we're not doing any fall sports. So this is already moving slower than the way it worked to the NCAA, mostly because we've just grown accustomed to a grouping of positive numbers, not meaning that this thing is
moving slower because the virus, let's say like March 10th and the NCAA tournament was supposed to be 7 days away.
Well, and everything was just different then. Like for me, it's, you know, like we canceled for different reasons then that we're even canceling things now. If I were those conferences, I might kick around. Like, I don't think personally that it's probably, the Big Ten's probably doing the right thing. Okay. I can't promise the health and safety of all those things beyond. There's reasons. I really want college football. I want regular football. I want baseball. I want every sport to be played desperately. I want every sport to be played for a variety of reasons. Even obvious ones like it's my job to talk sports and I want to talk sports with you. But I can't deny the fact that, you know, there is a big benefit to the schools who decide to go on even if others get left behind. The Big Ten in the, you know, in the, let's say Pac-10, Pac-12, if those are the two that decide to walk. The reason why they want the other three to go hand in hand with them is so that nobody is the beneficiary of continuing to play. Because if the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC are like, to hell with it, we're the football you're going to watch and you got nothing else going on, they get a huge boost in ratings for the conference. I think they get a boost in recruiting in years going forward. There's a lot of benefit in playing for very impossibly greedy reasons that have nothing to do with the health and safety of your players to do it. But that again, I'm not blind. I don't think college football operates to keep people safe, even in a pandemic, because that's never who they've been.
No, I'm not surprised that there's a chance and why the SEC or the Big 12 would want to continue playing and the advantage that it has. But I also don't think the sole reason the Big 10 wants, I think a lot of the Big 10 wanting everybody to be part is just because it's a unified message and they don't have to take as much of the heat, because we have seen the reaction. The first report that came out on Sunday that the Big 10 was getting closer and closer. We have seen politicians. We have seen former collegiate athletes.
And the president saying, you know, we want to play.
Yeah, we've seen this now turn in, you know, even more, you know, into a political thing as well. Like, so this reaction, the Big Ten is getting crushed for it, and it all starts with them. And so that's why I think the Big Ten also would like to have some other conferences join them. But they have no reason to do so unless they also come to the same conclusion, whether they're weighing first and foremost, let's hope, the health and safety of their student athletes, right? Let's hope that is first and foremost. We also know that there's the massive financial implications to this. I think that the negative of not playing college football this year, there are plenty of them, right? And we can say it's a simple, easy answer. I think that's incorrect. Like, I don't think it's an easy decision, whatever what you choose, no, whether it's to play or not. I think it's a very complicated one. I think there's plenty of reasons to play. I think there's plenty of reasons to not play. On both ends of this, I think you can certainly see the value that playing college football does bring for each individual student athlete that's out there. Like, from the not only opportunity to showcase yourself on a professional level at the next level with the National Football League, but there is, I do believe, something to be said for being able to stay on campus in that environment and have the opportunity for a lot of these kids to be in a better situation than they would be if they went home, both from a pandemic health safety standpoint and just like what we would always say about college football or student athletes. Like, a lot of people have an opportunity. They're around much better living conditions. There's plenty of situations where someone doesn't grow up in a stable area, a stable household, and this is actually the most stable thing that they've ever had in their life. And that's potentially going away. I do believe there is some credence to that being a major downside to not playing college football. But first and foremost has to be whether or not you can actually keep them safe while they're there. And I know people are going to continue to say, well, if they get it, they're going to be fine. And there's a majority of those numbers, if they're 18 to 20 year olds, yes, that they are going to either be asymptomatic or if they get symptoms, they're going to be fine and all that. But it's not just that. It's all it takes is one. You have major liability if
it's
you are
the people they come in contact with.
Major liability within the universities too. That if worst case scenario type of thing happens, all it takes is one, and that's something that these schools don't want to. If you're the one conference that does play. SEC, Big 12, whatever. You're the one that plays, and you did have the a player end up in the hospital. That it doesn't matter if it just takes one. That'd be something that no conference wants to deal with. The
Which
repercussions
is why those coalitions, the coalitions from both the Pac 12 and the Big 10, didn't want to sign. Remember, I crushed and will continue to those COVID waivers. Man, why would I sign this? You don't pay me for anything. I don't sign waivers. I don't go onto a job site in which they don't pay me and sign OSHA paperwork that says, I'll keep you safe. They don't give those, it's not how this works. I don't sign waivers of liability. It's like getting on a roller coaster, but you're not even supposed, they strap you in and force you to do it. And then they're like, go. And I get it. They have a choice in what they do.
Nobody said they can't opt out.
Well, they don't have deals in place for that either. They might lose an entire year of eligibility.
They have to get that part clarified. If they opt out, they should absolutely still have
eligibility. Which is what part of Trevor Lawrence's issue and what he was pushing for as part of his We Want to Play was just make sure people can choose to opt out if they want and don't question them.
Yeah.
But we've already seen college football coaches essentially threaten scholarships to player on audio if they chose not to play for that reason. For the reason being that, they joined a coalition that wanted to keep those things safe. That's concerning. That's why, college football can't really be trusted. And I appreciate that the Big Ten, who has, taken this very seriously from the beginning and were one of the first ones to announce a reduction in their schedule and were the first ones out in front of this, they've decided this is what it is. But obviously the SEC commissioner is going to say patience. Obviously there are major concerns, but we're going to wait. And I think they're probably waiting to see how many people are going to be on their side.
At the end of September is when the SEC was planning on starting, and they have the latest start date of any of the conferences. Is it delaying the inevitable? Who knows? But we'll get some more clarity on where things go with the Big Ten, I'm sure, by the time we get on the air tomorrow. The announcement is supposed to be Tuesday of some sort. Do they have other conferences joining up with them will be the question when it comes to that. Did you watch some baseball other than the Royals this weekend? Maybe you caught a little bit of the Astros and Oakland A's.
I did.
The A's, by the way, are red hot. They have had an amazing start to the season, but they've been taking on the Astros, and now the Astros have been involved in two brawls. This one was more about the Astros starting it than the Dodgers. I know the Dodgers had this Joe Kelly, and he was mouthing things, and they threw at him, but that was more of the Astros going back. There's plenty of history. The A's, this was all about the hitting coach for the Astros who started this whole thing. If you watch the video, Astros hitting coach Alex Cintron, he's in the dugout, and he starts jawing with the runner on first. Clearly starts jawing with him.
He motions with his fingers to say, come on, bring it.
Yep. And he didn't think the A's player was going to come over. The A's player takes off, and then suddenly the hitting coach for the Astros kind of hides behind, gets behind. It was in no rush, Cody. Was in no rush to actually approach the other player.
He actively took several steps back. So for a hitting coach, it didn't look like he was really ready to hit, was it? Wasn't ready to actually go to bat, was he? Just going to let the players do the talking for him after he talked all the trash. New rule. One, he got plunked three times in that series. That was the second time in that game. And the Astros players showed no remorse. Then while walking to first, he was clearly unhappy about being plunked for the third time, Gold. And they were chirping constantly, encouraging. And then the hitting coach was encouraging the fight. And then he responded like you would do. And nobody could respond to the Astros because then everyone just assumes it's about how much they cheated and did that way. And now they'll get extra bonus suspension to go with it. I'm assuming they're going to give his suspension sometime today. I'm going to guess it's going to be 20 games.
Well, it should be at least 2 weeks for the hitting coach.
No, I mean for the batter who ran after
him. I think the hitting coach should absolutely get at least 2 weeks. He's the one that hitting motioned coach, and started it.
Hitting coach started the entire thing.
Yeah.
We can't just always pretend the people who respond to these things are the ones who are responsible parties. The Astros think they're bulletproof because they weren't punished, and the league Rob Manfred essentially said, don't pick on them or I'll punish you more severely. The entire rule was put in place to protect the Astros. So anytime a player gets suspended for fighting with the Astros, an Astros player should get twice as long, is my new opinion. So the guy gets 20 games, then every Astros player who left the dugout should get 40.
Okay.
Just do this the right way, because they're clearly the guilty party.
They didn't charge.
They left the dugout. They came to the fight.
Sort of the hitting coach was clearly motioning.
They were told not to leave.
Well, just fire that guy. He's not that important.
That guy should absolutely be suspended for at least 2 weeks, minimum. If not, I saw Jim Bowden, former big league general manager. He said he should be suspended for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's correct. And every player who was in that fight should get suspended twice as long as the maximum A suspension. That's my new working theory. Every Astros player, what are we going to do? Like, they didn't get suspended the first time, so this is just like a make good.
Have you seen that?
I'm just slowly making. Also, have you three beanballs against the Astros.
Have you seen that the Astros, Springer, Altuve, they all struggling. All struggling so far.
That's bizarre. I actually got followed by an account today that was titled, Can Jose Altuve Hit 200?
And then in parentheses
it said 182.
Yeah, he's hitting him and Springer at 182, and Altuve made a fielding error the other day. It's been a rough start for Jose Altuve.
So you got an answer for you, for your boys there? You think it had something to do with getting the sign? You think that's why Altuve is hitting 182, or is this just like a Mondesi slow start to the season situation?
And Bregman's only hitting 219. I'm just saying.
Just saying. A slow start. Also, I don't think they're really that invested. They're just ready to get past this and then prove to everybody next year when they win it all.
You're already writing off this year.
I'm still so upset that they didn't have to go through the tour of just getting booed and harassed at every ballpark. I'm so upset that we didn't get that.
Go down to Kauffman's.
Yeah, let me get my credential and just go ahead and sit there and just start booing. Unfortunately, the Astros not at the K this year, so I'd be booing nobody. We did lose that off. We have to wait till next year.
Sorry.
They got all kinds of Astros.
You could drive down to Houston, get credential for that baseball game,
I'm
and
good.
Then boo.
I'm good. I'm
or
good.
Fly. Yeah, you used to live in Houston.
It's too damn hot.
Certainly you'd have a place to crash.
Too damn hot and muggy. I would have a place to crash, but Houston, the hotbed of one of the hotbeds. I'm good. I'm good. There's a lot of reasons not to go down there right now.
There's a few
it's
reasons.
Miserable weather-wise right now. In the middle of August, Houston is awful.
They'll have the dome closed, so it's fine. And then you can go down there, become a credentialed member of the media, ideally with a fake name in your case, and then boo them the way they do. I just don't understand. It's like they can instigate, and then when somebody correctly responds, baseball's like, oh, I can't believe
this
you
won't
ran
be the last
the
time. Yeah, this won't be the last time.
What was the hitting coach doing? It was absolutely absurd. Of all the people in there who should be acting reasonable, it's him, and yet still somehow he was incapable.
The final word.
As we wait for the final results on what's going to happen with college football, I am fearful and want to wish luck to anybody who does work in that industry. Like these are a lot of our colleagues who are in these things, or people we've come to know over the years. And if for some reason college football doesn't get to happen, that impacts tons of people. From people I know who cover and write about the sport, for people I know who work in television in the sport. We just saw NBC Sports Radio let go of a huge college basketball talk. They let go of the entire crew over there. College football talk. Just knowing that that was probably, you know, that the slowdown was coming. To guys I know who work cameras for sporting events, who work freelance work, who would expect those types of gigs to help them pay their bills. It's just... For that reason, the people you think of outside of college sports, it really hurts.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it a step further. You know, think about the college towns. If, in fact, Big Ten and these conferences don't have it, the implications it's going to have on the college towns, local bars, restaurants, you name it, what they count on Saturdays, they can, you know, those eight Saturday home games or six Saturday, they make their whole year, a lot of these plays. And so that's the devastating impact that this could have as well. There's so many layers to it. We'll see if we get any clarity. We'll be back at it tomorrow, of course, from 10 to 2. And in fact, we'll have Danny Welniak joining us. We'll see where things are at with the Royals. They'll be heading into their first game against the Cincinnati Reds. We'll talk some more Royals baseball. For now, though, we'll hand it off to the guys on the Drive.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.